Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, the Mid-Year Goals Review, Part 1.
Well, I don't know if careers are like management, but we certainly talk about management or manager tools about it being boring and repetitive and unsexy and unpretty. And yep. Most of all, good management is not dramatic, right? Drama's for the movies, and they don't make movies about management, right?
I mean, I wish they did. They wouldn't sell.
It would be very cool.
I'd buy them. I think I've said before on air that there's only one good movie that accurately represents management to some degree, and that's Disclosure, which of course is really not a movie about management. It just happens to get management right. It's about sexual harassment, but that's Michael Crichton for you. He's a great writer. Most people would say careers are different than management in that regard, in the undramatic nature. We all tend to remember things about our careers that are the dramatic moments, the promotions, the big promotions, maybe the home runs we hit, the great new job offers, the big failures, right? That make the press. Think about management. You know, people don't really think about management this way, but I'm pretty sure. I think it's been discontinued, but for years, the articles that were written about management, people management, and fortune were the worst managers alive, and people had to anonymously recommend people and the person who got the most votes. I mean, it was always just dragon lady or you know, jackass in charge, pardon my French. And it was, you know, it's another form of dramatic, right? We think of careers that way, and yet, in fact, good career management is just like good management in that it's boring, it's repetitive, it's unsexy, it's unpretty, like you said. We remember the dramatic moments. It's because that's just proof that our memories are emotionally anchored. At least that's what I read. Memories are emotional. And all those dramatic moments that we remember, the big promotions or the somebody else getting fired or marched out of the building or whatever, the dramatic successes, in fact, are just like slam dunks that we talked about in meetings, right? The slam dunk is what everybody remembers when somebody gets a big budget approved or a project gets the green light or what have you, and everybody goes, wow, what a great briefing. But of course, the briefing isn't what did it. It was the pre-wire in advance, the unsexy, unpretty, hard work of putting the thoughts together, pitching it differently to each of the key people who have to make a decision, and counting your votes, counting noses, counting heads before you ever go to the dramatic moment, which is the big board meeting or the big senior executive meeting. That's the beauty of pre-wire, and that leads to dramatic success. And the same thing's true for careers, which, of course, good pre-wires is a career management tool, right? It's not just a management tool; it's a career tool. And look, this is this cast, you know, getting ready for an annual review 6 months in advance, if you will, is the same thing. It is. This is the kind of undramatic stuff that happens behind the scenes that makes for successful careers, although what we'll remember about the successful career is the promotion, but the promotion is only the result of all the undramatic stuff before. And that means what we're talking about here is reviewing annual goals halfway through the year and making adjustments so that we don't have to answer for a year's worth of mistakes at the end of the year, and we can adjust ourselves as we go along.
Well, I can't think of anything more boring or unsexy or unpretty than looking at my performance goals 6 months before my annual review. So.
I never thought of it that way. This is the most, can we nominate this as the most unsexy, unpretty career tool? Wait, in our office at 7 o'clock at night on a July or early August day, thinking, yeah, this is going to help me in December with my review. It's not like I'm already busy and the family's going on vacation next week, but this is where I should be because Mike and Mark say success is undramatic. except for what my spouse is going to say when I get home. That's going to be dramatic.
Yeah. So if an effective effective career management has to be boring and unsexy, then you've nailed it. So
yeah, I've nailed it. Yeah. And
so okay. So now that we've just totally turned people off to the idea of listening to this cast, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah. Okay. So look, we recommend that halfway through the year you review. Every person review their annual performance goals and their progress against them. And we have 5 steps that we recommend you go through. First, schedule a time at the end of the day. And we're going to cover this again, but scheduling a time is important for these kinds of things, okay? Second, we're in that time we schedule, half an hour, whatever, we're going to assess progress, our progress at the year, at half year versus our goals for the year. If we're halfway through everything, well, lucky, we're probably in pretty good shape. Number 3, we're going to consider making changes, and making some choices around changes in our scope and our timing. In other words, could we delay something being done, or could we, in fact, narrow our scope or perhaps increase our scope if we've gotten pretty far ahead? Number 4, we also want to do something a lot of people miss. This is not a zero-sum game, so we want to consider new opportunities. It's not as common as simply making changes in scope or timing, but it's necessary to look at each time. It's just running the playbook. This is part of the career tools playbook. And then lastly, the last step is to prepare and send a communication with your update in preparation for having a meeting with your boss, obviously. So those are the 5 steps.
Good. Okay. So step number 1, of course, we're going to make this as boring and unsexy as we can. So we're just going to wait till the end of the day to schedule some time to think about this. Great.
Yeah. Look, you know, we're really killing the boring thing, but you know, boring works. And, you know, there are firms now that are going out of business, that went bankrupt, that reached for 15% returns when their historic industry averages have been 5%. And generally speaking, there's no free lunch. And we're not suggesting that every single situation, all the time, you should accept 1% with no risk rather than 2% with some risk. But there's an old saying that everybody wants to get to heaven and nobody wants to die. If there's a big return, then there's probably a big risk, or it requires hard work. This is one of those things that happens that nobody sees, and everybody wonders why. Yeah, okay, Joe over there, he doesn't get the big promotions, but he seems to be doing well. And that guy who got the big promotion 2 years ago also got fired when he tried something big and we committed a lot of resources and it turned out not so good. You can have a great career keeping your head down, and this is one of the ways you do it. And there are far too many people in the world today, career advisors, saying stick out, be different, be special, be unique. And, you know, Wendy, I think, made a comment on Twitter recently saying something to the effect of, yeah, it really makes you stand out if you send us your resume on CD. Unfortunately, we can't look at it because our security systems on our PCs won't allow us to use somebody's external CD. Nice idea, but, you know, terribly dramatic, but terribly ineffective as well. So this is one of those things. Scheduling time is one of those undramatic things. Having a meeting with ourselves is a more effective way to be. Rather than waiting for a late in the year surprise when we haven't done our homework, we make preparation to avoid that surprise part of our routine in advance. That's all we're saying. And in fact, let me just be clear. This cast is as much, if not maybe more, about scheduling our time to be effective than it is about the actual review of our performance that's coming up in 6 months. Senior executives, senior people in their careers all do this virtually every quarter. Because I don't know if we've ever said this before, at the very top levels of organizations, folks, annual reviews really aren't done between boss and subordinate. They're conducted in public in the finance pages of the Wall Street Journal or The Economist. those top executives know what their numbers are, or, okay, put differently, they know what their review looks like, without sitting down with their boss, because they've been managing the businesses daily, weekly, and quarterly, and their review is essentially whether or not something's profitable, which, of course, affects stock price and tends to get reported in the papers. On the other hand, the rest of us, we don't get those kind of very obvious quarterly reports if we're not running a business that contributes to the overall organization, and so we probably haven't gotten that. And this is a cast about careers, not about how we manage our directs. Although if you have directs, this is certainly related to that.
We're not talking about a lot of time here, right? In terms of scheduling.
No, you don't need to schedule more than an hour. But here's the thing. In fact, half hour is probably fine, right? But here's an important point that I think a lot of us miss when we're scheduling. We're doing this kind of boring management stuff, right? We're saying we recommend scheduling time to do this. Scheduling it in advance brings it to our attention. In fact, Wendy and I were talking the other day, to mention Wendy, and we talked about the reticular activating system. Once you schedule it, we're going to start thinking about the things we do relative to that event. When we sit down to actually review our progress, we're going to be more effective at it rather than simply sitting down all of a sudden and say, okay, let me just think about this. You're not going to be good at it. Give yourself a few days, give yourself a week, schedule it for next week and say, okay, between now and then, I'm going to open up my mind to the possibilities of the last 6 months and the next 6 months, and we're going to be more effective. It's as simple as that. And look, we're to some degree, somebody's listening right now and says they're sounding pretty pedantic, and I won't argue that to some degree, but this is one of the small things that makes a difference among managers, among individual contributors, among effective professionals. It's not enough, folks, to do these things when you think about it. Okay. Now, in fact, Mike knew this long before I did. Mike is more naturally organized than me. I tend to be more intuitive. I don't tend to care as much about the details, whereas he is good with details. It is not enough to get things done haphazardly as a manager, as an individual contributor, as an executive, if you want to be truly effective. If we don't schedule our time, and we're not talking, Mike, think about it. I mean, how many hours do we ask people to schedule? We don't ask for that much. We ask for one-on-ones. We ask for a weekly staff call. We ask for this quarterly. We recommend a monthly written review of our performance, of our projects, not performance, but of our projects, our tasks and our deliverables and so on. But that's really about it. But look, if we don't schedule time, here's the thing. If you don't schedule time, when we get busy, these things that need to get done won't get done. And if you're thinking I might want to do that in the middle of the year, but then you have a busy end of second quarter and you don't do it, why are you not doing it? In part because it wasn't scheduled. So look, for you newer managers who are listening, don't think to yourself, oh, I'm just going to sit down and do it. That's not being as effective as you can be. It doesn't take any more time to schedule time next week to think about it between now and then. And then when you sit down, you're going to be much more efficient in that period, that half an hour. Get in the habit of scheduling your time now, even if it's only a week away when you schedule it. Think of it this way. We've repeated before the title. I'm pretty sure we've talked about the title of a book we like, The Greatest Management Principle in the World. And the GMP, as they say, is the things that get rewarded are the things that get done. But really, I've argued for a while that that's really not the most important insight. Really, the book should have been the things that get measured are the things that get done. And the things that get measured and rewarded are the things that get done well. And what makes for an effective manager in the kind of operational tempo we have in the world today is somebody who schedules what they need to do that is going to be measured so that they can get rewarded. And this is, I mean, shoot, Drucker talks about this in the second chapter of The Effective Executive. So I'd like to suggest maybe to just tie this all up to keep me from talking forever about the importance of scheduling one's time, the manager tool's corollary to The Greatest Management Principle in the World, with a tip of the hat to Michael LaBeouf, the guy who wrote the book years ago. Effective managers schedule time for those things that are measured, and that increases our chances of doing those things well. And of course, that increases our chances of being rewarded. And organizations in general, by the way, folks, are pretty good about generally being fair, although I don't like the word fair terribly much, like I don't like the word should, organizations are generally pretty fair or equitable regarding the dispensation of rewards relative to results. If you create a lot of value, you're probably going to get a lot of rewards. Not in every case, not all the time, but in general, organizations are good at it. So if you do the right things well, the things that get measured, you're going to be rewarded disproportionately to those people who don't do the right things well. And I would argue for the vast majority of managers and executives Mike and I know, the ones that get them done more well more often are the ones who spend more time thinking about what they're going to spend their time doing, which is scheduling the right things.
Yeah, and I'd say that would apply to effective professionals as well. If you're an individual contributor, not a manager,
yeah,
the same thing applies.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep.
Good. Okay, so, all right, so we schedule some time. That's easy enough. We put it on our calendar. We can put it on our calendar months ahead of time. So what do we do once we've done
that? Oh, twiddle your thumbs. Easy. We review our performance goals for this year, right? And we compare our progress to them. So get out the old document that came out in December or January. Every time I do a cast about performance reviews, I think about my client that years ago that everyone joked that nothing got done in January, the start of their big year, the year, because everybody was busy writing reviews. And then in February, they would get around to figuring out what everybody would do for the rest of the year. I thought, gee, can I discount it by 8% since I've lost a month? But what we do is we get out that old document. And really, it's even easier if we've done our quarterly review in the end of the first quarter, Q1, to ask ourselves, okay, how have we been doing relative to our goals along the way, whether we had to report those to our boss or not. And we grab our performance plan and our development plan for the year, and we review what we're committed to. And, you know, for me, it would be writing them out longhand. Okay, I said I'd do X and Y and Z. Probably what I would do actually is if I had the document to edit it, I would take the document, I'd get rid of all the details, I'd spread it out a little bit, and I'd separate each one by maybe and give it half a page each. Maybe it's a 5 or 6 page document now with 5 or 10, you know, 10 or so things on it. And then I would have some room to take notes proof that I have that I did it. And we ask ourselves a very specific question about each one of our performance and development goals. And that is, what evidence is there that I've either achieved this goal or that I have made progress toward this particular performance or developmental goal?
Okay, it's the end of the second quarter. Are we just looking at those things that we were committed to deliver in the first and second quarter? Or are we looking at all the tasks for the year, even those that we haven't delivered but might have some intermediate deliverables?
Yeah, exactly. And we really have a couple of things that we're looking at. We're looking at, okay, have we accomplished the things we're supposed to accomplish, right? Which is things that are at the deliverable date, the final date is before the date we're sitting down, Q1, Q2. Not all, but most. Okay, maybe not most. The plurality of objectives, annual objectives, have some sort of milestones along the way. And if you're halfway through the year, you should be roughly halfway there. But some of them are things like by July 1st, do X, or by May 15th, do Y. And so we want to capture whether or not we have, in fact, done those things. So any goal we had for the year, whether it was supposed to be done on February 1st or March 15th or December 31st, any of them, we want to capture our progress against it. If, in fact, it had happened in May and we're not done yet, we better have a reason why. And we'll talk about some of the not so great reasons why here in a minute. But we want to compare ourselves to things that are already supposed to be done, and we need to be ready to tell our boss that we're not done, or we need to be able to give a percentage or a proof that we are where we're supposed to be relative to an annual goal. If it's halfway through the year and you're only 25% of the way through something that's supposed to take you all year and you're supposed to have started in January, yeah, you're in trouble and you might as well talk about it now. So you're right. It's both things that last the whole year and things that are 3 quarters long, 2 quarters long, 1 quarter long, 1 month long. We want to capture all those things. And essentially for those things we've already supposed to be done, if we're in fact done, we're going to remind our boss we did them, but also set them aside and spend more time on really what we're getting at, which is, okay, how are we going to address the last half of the year? But the key point there, the key word is evidence. Too many managers, too many individual contributors, too many executives tend to talk about how they feel about what's happened. You know, we feel good about our progress, but really, actually, we don't feel good about our progress. We just feel good about how much work we've been doing. That's what most managers, most career people think. Most professionals say, I've been busy. Gosh, I mean, you know, let me show you all the stuff I've done. Well, the problem is what you've done may not be against our goal, against your goals. And what's worse, it may be that your boss is responsible for it, but it doesn't matter. We're looking for evidence, not feelings. Basically, the bottom line is feelings are not clearly delineated between actual progress and mitigating circumstances. If we've made no progress, but we feel good about it, it's probably because we have mitigating circumstances. And those make sense to us because we lived it. But they won't make that much sense to our boss at the end of the year. Too many times when we've coached executives, we're reviewing things. At some point, we ask about status, we ask about progress. And we want to share with you three examples that are classic. They probably cover 75% of the possible examples or the possible rationales we get. There are three of them. And the first one we get, when we get a disconnect between what's supposed to have been done and what actually has been done, the first one we get is, well, but Mark or Mike, that objective, that thing you're talking about, that X you're getting on me for not being done with, that's OBE, which is, by the way, for those of you who don't know, that's overcome by events, right? That's the most common rationale for an undelivered upon goal when we work with professionals, comparing their performance against documented goals for the quarter, the half year or the whole year.
No, you can't hold me accountable for that. Things changed. They always do around here.
Yeah, that's what people say. Hey, things change. And look, here's the thing, guys. We know you're right. Things did change. But here's the problem with that. The document we're going to be compared to at the end of the year will not have changed. And the changes seem reasonable at the time they're happening, but at the end of the year, we're both supposed to take a step up out of the flow of the incessant flow of work and get some perspective. And the perspective looks like, well, we just didn't do it. Too many managers have asked us how to improve their results year over year, but they always ask us at the end of the year, and that's too late. It's not enough to be able to argue at the end of the year that something we missed is OBE. Again, we don't have any doubt that it was overcome by events, but our bosses owe a review to their bosses of us, and plenty of our bosses are okay with keeping themselves all square relative to our review by legitimately saying, look, okay, you know, maybe it is OBE, but I have to evaluate you against something. What my bosses know I'm supposed to evaluate against is this document. My boss is going to look at your performance and development goals. He's not aware of the things that I had you working on that were absolute necessity, and he may forget that he was the one that told me to have you work on them, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to compare you to this. And if you haven't had a discussion, if you haven't had an analysis, if you haven't done a review in the middle of the year, trying to accomplish something against that at late in the year, if you're given 3 weeks to make something look pretty or try to essentially make a case for why you didn't do something, if your boss draws a line in the sand, if our boss draws a line in the sand and said, nope, that one I need, I know how OBE it's been, and I know I put you in the wrong place, but frankly, there's nothing I can do about it. You want 6 months and not 3 days or 6 days or something like that.
Okay, so that's one excuse we hear often. What about a more reasonable, more rational excuse, which is resources? You know, I was supposed to get $200,000 to complete this project. I only got $75,000. So due to lack of resources, I didn't get the project done. I missed my deliverable.
And frankly, the objective was contingent upon the resources, right? I mean, your boss knew that.
Yeah, exactly. At least in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. And I would argue that probably it was in his or her mind at some point. And look, I've seen this one as likely to be true as the OBE defense. Look, this is just the organization behaving as if our objective was OBE or made less valuable by changes of some sort or the other, because the organization put the resources onto something else. And so another event overcame our event, our resource need, and so our resource need got trumped, and so we couldn't do it. Just like we are a resource and we get trumped and work on X rather than Y, and then we want to be forgiven for Y when in fact some bosses won't and the organization won't either. If we're obligated to perform to a particular objective, then we're obligated to communicate about it if we're going to do it or if we're not. And frankly, what's amazing is people say, well, I don't want to talk about the things I'm not going to get done, but everybody wants to talk about the things they have done, right? Look, if you're obligated to do it, you're obligated to communicate about it, whether the communication is positive or negative. It's not professional for us to know we're going to miss something because resources that we, and look, and our boss too, we agreed were necessary if they weren't made available, right? And then to not communicate about slipping status due to that lack of resources. It's just not professional. Too many of us assume that to our own benefit, that the boss surely knows about our lack of resources and therefore is tacitly blessing our lack of progress, our lack of work because we don't have the resources. And here's what bosses have told me privately. Yeah, I was aware of it. And yeah, I know I'm in a gray area here. I may have been tacitly aware that he wasn't working on it, but I can't tell my boss I was tacitly aware of it and I'm responsible for it and I didn't change it. And so somebody's gonna be left holding the bag. And frankly, this is said sometimes by very professional people. I'm gonna be holding the bag, but I'm not gonna hold it myself. The person who was supposed to be doing the work and didn't communicate about the resources they needed, they're gonna be holding the bag too. So don't assume that your boss is hanging you out to dry on this one, folks. He or she is not. They're hanging in the wind with you, but it doesn't feel that way when you're the one hanging in the wind.
Yeah, well, this is why we hear this often from inexperienced professionals, and that look, we're in a land of scarcity. We're always in a land of scarcity, and the idea that just because I don't get all the resources I said I needed at the beginning of the project, using that as an excuse for not delivering on something just doesn't go terribly far.
Yeah, that may be a cast there about the sign of youth. There, when I think of young, fairly inexperienced people, the two things I see two things I see quite commonly are, number one, great putting their best foot forward and dragging the other one behind. In other words, not following through. Classic junior mistake. And the other one is assuming that resources are unlimited and I should get some rather than having to fight for them or making a case for them. And then, pardon me for saying so, but whining about not having them. Gosh, if everybody had all the resources they need, everybody's job would be easy. That's the whole point of profit, is that resources are constrained. If resources were unlimited, profit wouldn't be a problem.
Okay, well, that second one. Well, here's the third one. And again, this sounds like a rational excuse to me. Look, at the beginning of the year, we set 5 objectives. And then over the course of the last 6 months, you've had me working on 15 other things. So because of you, I haven't had the time to do the work.
Yeah, I made this mistake early in my career, no question about it. Look, our bosses don't see us as having limited time. They see us as having nearly unlimited time. They expect us to make prioritization decisions, and they expect us to be able to communicate about our status, okay? Look, there are two extremes here. One is the IT organization, the mechanistic IT organizations of the world, the vast majority of them, who act as if the pattern is full or we have no free resources. That's their refrain all the time. And the other extreme is marketing organizations also stupidly saying, oh, sure, we can do that. We can do almost anything, only then not delivering on anything they promised except the thing that interested them at that particular moment. One is obsessive compulsive and the other was ADD. At the extreme, it's not a purely black and white thing, but there are plenty that are very close to black on both ends of the spectrum here. But look, as professionals, we're obligated to know what we can do and can't do. And if we do accept work, we can't assume that it is intended to replace work we're already doing and that we get to just simply ignore stuff. We're supposed to supplement what we've already done and we're expected to figure out how to do things more effectively. And this harkens back very closely to the delegation task and the juggling koan that we put out a couple of years ago. Okay, so those are some excuses. The key word I want to come back to, though, I want to beat this horse till it's dead, is evidence. If we've been managing our priorities and our time and our energy well, we'll likely have been communicating status, although I'm amazed at the amount of energy, for instance, the project management industry has put into, let's make it easy for people to report status. And in fact, I think we've proven that we could make it trivial. We could make it beaming between two brains and people still won't do it. And the reason why is because underlying work hasn't been done. And that's why people don't want to report status. That's just me. I could be wrong. But look, if we've been doing our work, hopefully we've been communicating status and we can simply review the status that we've already communicated recently. You know, we're looking for documents, we're looking for meeting notes, we're looking for emails of completions or congratulations, we're looking, hope against hope, for project charts, deadlines met, green, yellow, red, rag charts, the whole thing. And look, it's possible we won't have evidence. It's happened to me many times. And so when that happens, you've got two actions you've got to take as a professional. This is the point at which people go, oh gosh, you know what? I think I really know why they wanted this to be boring and unsexy, because they wanted to hide that it was actually a little bit hard. Yeah, just because you're sitting by yourself doesn't mean it's going to be easy. Some people, some professionals don't do this because they know that for many of us, it creates more work in order to reduce our risk at the end of the year. The two things we've got to do is, number one, we've got to go back and start creating the evidence.
Oh, that sounds really good.
That sounds bad, doesn't it? I don't mean it that way. What we mean is go back and find evidence, emails, deliverables, reports from other people that show what we either did or what we contributed to, or even what was done that we didn't do, as long as it serves to show progress on our objectives. Now look, obviously work that we didn't do is far more likely to relate to performance goals, right, rather than development goals, at least for the individual contributors of the world. But the second thing we've got to do is to commit to avoiding this sort of ex post facto mistake in our second half. Usually we recommend project planning and reporting for performance and development goals. In other words, look, if you've got 60% of a project to get done in 50% of the year, come up with a project plan, lay it all out, and talk to your boss and talk to your team and say, these are new deliverables, and then report every week. You'll be amazed that even though you think, gosh, I'm reporting red on things, you, in fact, red exists or amber exists to get more resources or to get more attention. And maybe you get a little more attention. Maybe your boss says, gee, you're a little bit behind. But at the end of the year, when everything you're supposed to have done, you've done, and somebody else hasn't done this and hasn't managed themselves and hasn't taken little shots throughout the year and through the Q3 and Q4, and they don't have stuff done and they've only got 30% of their stuff done, who's going to get a bigger share of the rewards at the end of the year? You are. Why? Because you are willing to plan your work and then work your plan. On the other hand, that project planning, all that kind of stuff, that's for a separate cast. We just know that if, in fact, you are not there and you need to come up with something, if there's not evidence, or there's evidence that we're not where we need to be, we need to create evidence, go back and find it, not create it out of whole cloth, and also plan better for the coming year so we will have the evidence at the end of the year and we're not in this pinch again. Okay, now look, we don't recommend, important implication that we've not really made clear yet, we're not recommending, folks, that you start by thinking about what you need to do for the rest of the year. Most people are we're all so used to accepting a new set of criteria. Today, we open the paper, we see what's going on in the world, we listen, we look at our news feeds, we look at the morning news on TV, or we listen to it on the radio on the way to work, what have you, or on the train, or on our iPod, and a news podcast or whatever, and we say, okay, this is the new reality. We look at emails in the morning about who's upset and where the priorities and what the resources are and so on, and we create the future every day. And that, there's nothing wrong with that. The problem is we immediately think, okay, what do I need to do? We don't start this effort by thinking about the latter half of the year. We start this effort with what we've already been obligated to do and assessing our performance up until now. Too many managers immediately jump to what we're working on now and then say, okay, I've got to get busy for the rest of the year. We think about what we've been assigned and doing that. And that the energy that we have for that eats up our time and effort in reviewing what we've been getting paid for the past 6 months. In other words, we start thinking, okay, how am I going to make the rest of the year good, rather than spending time asking ourselves how we did thus far. It's only going to take a half an hour or an hour. This meeting, this private time that you're scheduling, is not designed solely to get right to a project plan. The project plan happens after we review every single thing we're supposed to have done. okay, look, we know we're behind. We think our boss knows. She's had a tendency to look the other way. So now that we're doing this, rather than patching up the past, let's go ahead and make a solid start on the second half. And look, it's a good thought in a way. Okay, I know I'm behind, so now let me get busy. But there's a flaw with it. If our analysis shows us changing how we're going to be working, how we're going to be approaching these projects, what we're going to be doing in the second half, we promise you, your boss is going to expect first some sort of accounting for the first half of our year. If we just go in thinking we're going to pitch an effective second half, we're going to get caught flat-footed when we're asked for that first half update. Wait. Okay, before we get into the second half and all this, let's go back. Let's review how you got where you are now. So read me in, brief me up to speed. And then suddenly we're not ready for it because we don't have the data in front of us. And then essentially what we're doing is coming up with a plan based on less than ideal work. And then we're just basically throwing out the baby with the bathwater. We're throwing good money after bad, so to speak. So we always review first. It's going to make our first half defense effective, and it'll make our second half analysis better, and then it'll make the pitch about what we're going to be doing in the second half to be perceived as highly effective.
All right, that's a good place to stop for this week. We'll complete the show next week. In the meantime, we'll see you on the discussion forums, www.managertools.com/forums. See you there, folks. So long.